Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Headquarters. I am excited to see this room as full as it is right now. Everyone's stuffed tight. We left, you know, when COVID was happening, we had all the spaces between our seats. We found that we really liked it because you had space between you. We don't have room to do it right now. So this is a lot more fellowship. I'd be remiss before I start tonight to say that, for lack of being Mr. Captain Obvious, we made it to the feast. So you're thinking, okay, Mr. Pack said if we make it to the feast, there may be more for him to say. So we made it to the feast, and I can assure you that he does have more to say. So they're having their opening night starting in about half an hour. They're an hour behind us. So a couple questions before we really get into the message. Partly because I'm incredibly excited to show off the campus. I've never actually had a feast here before. I'm usually here for a day and out the door. So this time I'm the first time, I think, in 15 years that I've actually not traveled for the feast. It's no complaints from this side of the lectern. So I have a couple questions. First, I want to see a show of hands tonight. Who in the room, this is your first Feast of Tabernacles? Raise your hand up. Get nice and high, nice and high. Okay, we've got, what, two, four, six, about six? Okay, so about six of you. Nice. So six of you, first Feast of Tabernacles. Another show of hands. Who is this who is coming to headquarters for the first time? Oh, I'm excited. I know where every single hole was dug, wall was painted. My wife was teasing me that, no, you can't give three-hour tours. And so we'll do somewhere similar to that, but we'll have some building tours and land tours and various things. You heard Mr. Giles reference in the beginning the announcement. So there will be a lot to do this feast, a lot to take advantage of, and a lot of different ways to serve, because this is not normal. What you are doing, what you're choosing to do tonight is just simply not normal. We have the grocery store that you've heard me reference many times, Giant Eagle, in various sermons. And they're right now in their shopping, not thinking anything of it. It is not a high day for them. They don't think about the Feast of Tabernacles. It's one of those holy days that people don't even really associate, even with the Jews, or think about it. They know if you know anything about the Bible, you know the Jews keep that holy day of Sukkot. But most people have no clue what that is. If you would have asked me that 25 years ago, I would have looked at you confused. But what you're doing is not normal. This is simply not normal. To stop in the middle of what is a busy world. All of you have busy lives, things you're doing, you traveled, you have jobs, and you walked away from it. You walked away from it and came here to stop your routine. You could have gone to work tomorrow, if you weren't in God's way, you didn't want to obey him. You could have done all of those things that would have been a perfectly normal for everyone around you. But you chose to do something different. You chose to do something different. You decided to stop work, stop your emails, stop your appointments, stop all the daily pressures of life and work and job and all of those elements to come here. The feast is a rare opportunity to do that, because no other time of year do we stop for an entire 8 days, if you take in the last great day as well. You never do that, unless perhaps you go on a vacation. So we've said that second tithe is God's savings plan for his mandatory vacation. But if this is your first feast, you're probably feeling a little bit nervous because how is this going to work? I don't really know anything. I've saved up. But if you've been doing this for a while, you know this is not a vacation. What we do at the feast is not put your feet up, relax mode. No, it's very different than that, because we are trying to take advantage of those 8 days. We just don't want those 8 days to come and go. My wife and I took a vacation several months back. We went up to Toronto for a few days and had a Sabbath over a weekend, and literally put our feet up, although we walked everywhere, but relaxed. You'll do some of that at the feast. Do some relaxing. You'll do a lot of walking. You'll get a lot of getting around. But this isn't a vacation. this isn't that time of year when we just relax. No, the feast is work. The feast takes effort, not just for those who are running around behind the scenes, but for everyone here, we should all be putting in a lot of effort. We'll talk about what and why and how as we continue, but a lot of effort should be put in to the feast. God tells us to come here and rejoice. You'll hear messages during the feast about rejoicing. God tells us to come here to learn to fear him, revere him. That's nothing that ever happens on a vacation. You can rejoice, but you don't rejoice with 150, 180 of your friends typically on any vacation. Because rejoicing strengthens bonds. Joy strengthens bonds. You'll have fun together. You'll laugh together. You'll joke together. You'll break bread together. And all of us will get to know each other more. It is one of the reasons why I'm so excited about being in one location. I loved traveling, got to see many, many people in different parts of the country and around the U.S. and Canada. But often it was a little bit walking by, shaking their hand, hello, we're up in an airplane and off we go. Last couple of years, a little slower, but being here the entire time, I'm excited to get to know all of you and show off the campus and all the activities we have planned. But rejoicing brings us closer together. It also builds unity in us. And most importantly, it becomes very easy to rejoice with what the Feast of Tabernacles pictures. It is a time for personal and spiritual growth unlike any other time of the year. So I'll let the cat out of the bag early on. If you have an effective feast, if you work at this feast, you will not leave how you came. You won't go home knowing the same people or having the same connections or any of those things. You will leave this Feast of Tabernacles knowing many more people. It's the nice that the size of our feast sites. I went to a feast in Worldwide, a couple of them when I was younger and not in God's way at all, but my mom took me along because I was a minor and I had no choice. And I remember walking in, it was Niagara Falls, you've probably heard me tell this story before. I'm walking into Niagara Falls on the American side, and it was in the big convention center. I think there's 8,000 or so, 10,000 people in that convention center. And I walk into it, and I remember looking around thinking, wow, my mother is in a big cult. And I had no idea there were sites around the world. But if you have 8 or 10,000 people, you can't get to know everyone. You can't shake everyone's hand, learn everyone's name. Well, at our size, you're able to do that. So it's a blessing. So if we approach this feast with purpose and work, we will not leave the same way we came. So let's discover how the feast can be both a meaningful rejoicing period and also meaningful for our growth. Let's open our Bibles. We're going to review a little bit about why we're here. Go to Leviticus 23. Start with some basics. All the sermon men are having a heart attack right now since I'm covering all the verses that they want to cover in their messages. I get to have fun, too. I'm the first speaker. Leviticus 23 and verse 33. We'll start in verse 33. And it reads, "And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of the 7th month shall be a feast of tabernacles for 7 days unto the Lord. And on the first day, it'll be a holy convocation. We start tonight, as our tradition is, with an opening night message, an opening night service. Serve all work in. 7 days you shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. And on the 8th day, it shall be a holy convocation unto you, and you shall be made an offering made by fire unto the Lord." And it's a solemn assembly. We'll have an offering taken up tomorrow on the high day service in the morning. "And you shall do no servile work therein. These are the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, to offer an offering made by fire." If you go back in context, it reviews the other holy days, atonement and trumpets and so forth. Verse 38, besides the Sabbaths of the Lord, and besides your gifts, and beside all your vows, and beside all your freewill offerings, which you give to the Lord, also in the 15th day of the seventh month, that's where we are tonight, we've entered in, sun has gone down, we are now officially into the next day as God measures it. On the first day shall be a Sabbath, and on the eighth day shall be a Sabbath. Haven't we learned so much about the 7 versus 8 days and how the last great day has such a connection and meaning that we never understood in years past? And it shall take it upon you on the first day, the boroughs of goodly trees and the branches of palm trees and the boroughs of thick trees and the willows of the brook. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days. We're to rejoice. That's not an optional thing. We can't come to the feast and be down. If we're down, you may have had a flat tire or run into car issues, whatever it was getting here, you're here. We can't let anything that happened to us before we got here let us stop from obeying that command. That's a command. God says you have to rejoice. That means it starts with put a smile on our faces. We smile, that makes you feel better, you're around God's people. I was going to make you all smile, but you're all pretty much smiling, so that don't even need to. And you shall keep the feast unto the Lord, verse 41, 7 days in the year, feast in 7 days in the year shall be a statute forever in your generations, and you shall celebrate it in the seventh month, as we still keep it today. You shall dwell in booths 7 days. We are spoiled rotten, aren't we? Booths, sticks. You heard Mr. Pack explain recently what those were in more detail than I think we've ever looked into, how they're attached together. I don't care how bad your hotel is. It is not a booth. Those would be breezy, wouldn't they? And in Ohio, this time of year, they'd be a little chilly, too. You shall celebrate it 7 months, verse 42, and you shall dwell in booths 7 days. All that are Israelites born shall dwell in booths, that your generation may know that I made the children of Israel to dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. We're to rejoice because we are picturing a time both looking back to ancient Israel when they were taken out of Egypt and forward when the kingdom of God will be in place around this entire world. We know that Egypt pictures sin. When Israel was taken out of that sinful nation, made to their own nation, they were supposed to be the model. The world was supposed to be able to look at Israel and say, oh, that's how I should live. Their God blesses them because of their obedience. I want to live that way of life. That's not how it worked out, is it? Over and over and over again, Israel fell. And God, in his wisdom, knew that he'd have to have a way to help them. They just simply couldn't change because they had that stony heart. You and I came out of this world, and we picture what that's like. Every single day of our lives, not just 7 days, but that's why the feast is a 7-day festival, 8 days counting the last great day, because it's about the process of coming out of sin, of leaving Egypt behind us. Just like we do in the spring with the days of unleavened bread. We put that sin behind us and come out of the world and picture what the world gets to experience in a very, very short period from now. Also should make us remember that things are temporary. The older you get, I am getting closer to being able to say that. I can't really say that yet. I don't turn 50 for another month and a half. Yeah, you're all... See, the hoary heads in the room are like, yeah, I remember 50. What I wouldn't give for 50. And then if you're in your teens, you're like, wow, he's almost 50? No, but as you get older, you appreciate how this world is temporary. Our lives are temporary because we are striving for something so much bigger, so much more important. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 14. Deuteronomy chapter 14. Start in verse 22 of Deuteronomy 14. 22 reads, "You shall truly tithe all the increase of your seed that the field brings in forth year by year. And you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place which he shall choose to place his name there." What place could God have more placed his name than the headquarters of his church? That's why it's special to be here. This may be your assigned site, or you may have traveled and transferred in here. You get to be at a place God put his name. So does everyone else in the world at their sites. But your site is the headquarters of his church. That makes your experience unique. Continuing on, "The tithe of your corn," still in verse 23, "and of your wine and of your oil, the firstlings of your herds and flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always." The other main reason we're at the feast, we're to rejoice and to fear God. Verse 24, "If the way be too long for you and you're not able to carry it, all the stuff," I'm sure we're thankful that all the things that we have to carry with us to the feast are our luggage, not our flocks and herds and oil and wine and corn. Again, aren't we spoiled? Can you imagine going to the feast like that? Your cart behind you, no. Let's hear it for air conditioning. Verse 25, "And you, if you're not able to do it, and choose the place," end of verse 24 still, "or the place be too far from you, which the Lord your God shall choose to set his name there, when the Lord your God has blessed you, then you shall turn it into money, saving second tithe, and bind it up in your hand, and go to the place which the Lord your God should choose." And then jumping down to the next verse, in verse 26, "And you shall bestow that money for whatsoever your soul lusts after." Of course, within God's law. But that second tithe you saved is meant for you to do the things that you want to do. Experience the things that you may not normally do. Whatsoever your soul lusts after. That's a pretty strong statement. God doesn't, he's not really hyperbolic in a lot of his statements in the Bible, unless he's really putting force behind it. So he says, whatsoever your soul lusts after, for oxen, meat, or sheep. So that's your steaks, oxen and sheep. Or, and you live in this modern age, that can be your beef and the chicken and the turkey and the salmon. And you could go down the list of different meats and food we can enjoy. Or for wine, or for strong drink, wine. If you know me, I like whiskey. I'm a rye drinker. So the feast is a time, I haven't had a chance to do it yet, but I will go up to the Acme store in Fairlawn and go look behind the case that you can't walk up to and you have to point and say and figure out which of those that I want to enjoy this feast. Or for whatsoever your soul desires. It says it twice. "And you shall eat there before the Lord your God, and then you shall rejoice." Because of course you will. You're doing the things that you want to do, whatsoever your soul lusts after. And oh, brethren, we have such activities planned for this feast. I don't care if you're a senior, you heard that. We have every age bracket planned. So if you're a senior, we've got you covered. If you're a single, we got you covered. If you're a teenager, we got you covered. If you're not yet a teenager, we got you covered. And then there's the mix it all together with family day and dinner dance and tours. There'll be something to do. There's plenty to do. But find those things that you want to do, whatsoever your soul lusts after. It's a command. So we're to eat good food, drink good drink, and do whatever our soul desires. That means demands. So your soul is demand. Your life, you are demanding to do things, and that's obeying God. But it's also about doing it with other people, too. That's why this room's stuffed full. That's why God brings us together, because you could keep. There are folks, last I saw, there were a good 15 people on the live stream that are shut-ins. And your heart goes out to those folks that I can wave to them. We'll have something set up here. So I'll aside here, but we'll actually set up a microphone and we'll zoom in from the cameras in the back. So once we have that set up starting tomorrow, you can be able to say something to the folks in the live stream. You can't see them, but they can see you. And knowing a couple that are watching in myself, it means a lot when people think about you. And we were able to do that for all the sites in the U.S. So it's a special time. It's for everyone to come together. So your heart goes out to those who can't be here, so take advantage of the time you have because you're able to. And sign the cards and make sure they know that we care. But that's all wonderful, isn't it? That we can do whatsoever soul lusts after, we can be together, we can have fun, if you will, rejoice. It's very simple. But the feast itself is about something so much bigger. God makes it incredibly pleasurable because that makes the feast that much fun. Make you get excited. Every year, you hear feast fever. I don't think I've ever been as excited for a feast as I have been this year because of being here. And it's neat to be able to, again, you'll hear me say this over and over again, to show off the campus and see what God's people have done, what God has inspired us to be able to do, to be that example in a world that's growing darker and darker. But the act of being here is not as important as what the feast pictures. Think about the different holy days. Go back in your mind as you play them through. Passover with Christ's sacrifice. Days of unleavened bread. Again, coming out of Egypt, coming out of sin. Very similar. Repeat. Pentecost. You and I want to be those first fruits, don't we? Trumpets. Symbolizes the arrival of the kingdom. Events kicking off really into the next phase. Atonement. Satan's put away. We just see that in our rearview mirror last Sabbath. And then the feast pictures a time when the whole world is under the kingdom of God. You're in a bubble, even more so than people in Florida or Grand Junction or Rogers or any of our sites around the world. You're in a bubble here. You can walk anywhere you want. You can experience. You're not worried about other people around. You are surrounded by God's people. Your interactions with the world are going to essentially be at your hotel. And there's enough of you, you'll probably run into each other at the hotels, gas stations, and restaurants. When you're here, you hit that gate out front and come inside, you're inside what is as close as you'll get to a millennial setting anywhere in the world. And of course, if we make it to the eighth day, pictures God opening his spirit to the entire world. But at a certain point, things change in that plan of God. The earlier parts of it, the spring especially, up to Pentecost, is for us. It's about us, ultimately the world as well. But after you reach a certain point, you pass a threshold, it's no longer about you and I. The feast and the last great day is about them. We're just picturing what they get to do. We are, for lack of a better term, we're play acting. We're pretending like it's the kingdom of God for 8 days. The feast pictures a time for them. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 2. Isaiah chapter 2. Start at the beginning of the book of Isaiah. Verse 1 reads, "The word that Isaiah the son of Amoz saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem." I'll let you finish turning there. Here's some pages still. Isaiah 2 and verse 2. "And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it." This is one of those verses that started the prophecy series. Because how was that mountain in the last days? It was one of the things that started us down this discovery of so much truth and knowledge. But it doesn't make the verse any less potent. Because in the last days, the mountain of the Lord's house will be built. That means everyone will have an opportunity to be able to obey, to be converted, receive God's Spirit, and live under the government of God. You look at the world around us. We're 20 days out from an American election, and it is one of those situations you think, wow, I am glad we don't vote. Because you kind of look at one side and you think, no. Then you look at the other side of the aisle and you think, no. And you step back as a Christian and think, whew, I don't have to choose God. You're going to have a hard time figuring out which is the basis of those folks. So that's up to you. I'm staying out of your mix. But God says that's up to him, and I'm glad we don't have to deal with it because it's chaos. Gone are the days of your Abraham Lincolns or George Washingtons. No, that's not that time anymore. And even then wasn't the kingdom of God. We've just continued to go further and further and further, and we are ready for them to know what we know. Because they're trying. People, you meet them all the time, you're in your work and your job. There are people that you meet, you think, wow, they're going to be easy to work with in the kingdom. Everyone knows some of those kind of people. And you also know the opposite. But you get people who are sincere, but as Mr. Armstrong, they may be sincere, but they're sincerely wrong. But they'll be easy to work with because they want to fix things, but can't. You can't fix man's problems. They're impossible to solve. We need the mountain of the Lord's house, the government of God, to be established on top of all the mountains, as it says in verse 2, above the hills, so everyone can flow up to that mountain. Verse 3 of that same chapter, Isaiah 2. And many people shall go and say, come you, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And he shall judge among the nations, and he shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Won't even have war. They won't even learn war anymore. You and I will be teaching that. Again, the feast is not for us. The feast is for those outside. We get to teach them. So we come to the feast to learn to be more effective teachers. As we become more effective Christians, we become more effective teachers. I never thought I would ever stand on this side of the lectern. I was the IT guy. And I loved it. And I still get to do it. I still get to play with technology. But I never thought I'd be on this side of the lectern. But I listened and I learned. And at a certain point, God gave me the opportunity to teach. You're going to get the same opportunity. It's just a question of, will it be this side of the kingdom or the other side? That's what we're training to do. To teach all of those people, even the ones that may be more difficult to get along with now, why we do this thing that's just simply not normal, and come together on a Wednesday night at the end of summer, beginning of fall, to have someone talk to you for an hour and then do it again tomorrow for two services and then do it again the next day. And they'll understand why at some point. We're picturing this for them. Brethren, that should be inspiring. Young or old, healthy, more frail, you will be a teacher in the kingdom of God. You will be a priest teaching mankind how to live the way of life that is full of the blessings, the abundance, all of the things that you know. You know why you're here. You know why you've felt this journey and walked this path for 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. You know the struggles as we've learned to understand more of the Bible. You know. They don't. Not yet. But you will teach them. That's why the feast isn't a vacation. We don't come here to put our feet up. We come here to be better teachers, more effective teachers. That's how you know you left the feast in a different way than you came. You're a better teacher. Because we know the verses. Someone comes to you and has a question. You have to be ready to answer with meekness and fears, it says in Peter. But you have to be ready. And over the next 8 days, we're going to get ready. We're going to prepare with whatever time God gives us to take advantage of. We will become better teachers. Because we're looking forward to that time. They don't fight. There won't be war. We'll be able to show them the way to live. Go to Isaiah 11 over a few chapters. Isaiah chapter 11. Pick it up at verse 1. Isaiah 11, 1. And there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, verse 1, and out of the branch shall grow out of his roots, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. And the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord. Verse 3, and shall make of him quick understanding in the fear of the Lord. When we fear God, he inspires us to know answers. When we're afraid that our Creator will not be there for us if we don't obey him, if we have fear that we think, okay, what do I do? No, we look at God and say, I fear you, God, because you can destroy me. The kindness and severity of God. But I fear you, God, because you made the universe. I fear you because I want to learn to be like you. And when we do that, he makes us of, as it says in verse 3, of quick understanding in the fear of the Lord. And he shall not judge after the sight of his eyes, neither reprove after the hearing of his ears. We're talking about Elijah in this case, but it'll be all of us as God beings. But with righteousness shall he judge the poor, and he'll reprove with equity the meek of the earth. And he shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked. And the righteousness shall be a girdle of his loins, and faithfulness the girdle of his reins. And verse 6, the wolf shall dwell with the lamb. Starting to build a picture of what the kingdom looks like. And the leopard shall lie with the kid. And the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. That gives you goosebumps when you try to visualize it and think about what that's like. A little child. I have a little child. Imagine just leading a lion. Or a wolf. And a cow and the bear shall feed, and their young ones shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox, and the suckling child shall play on the hole of an asp, and the weaned child shall put his hand on the cockatrice's den. They shall not hurt nor destroy, not even hurt or destroy, in all my holy mountain. For the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea. That's everywhere. Water is an amazing thing. After building a campus for 2013 is when we moved in, but we were building before that. There's one major thing. If you are in construction, you know this. If you do civil engineering especially, you really know this. There is one concern above all other concerns that you have when you're doing any sort of construction of any kind, especially of scope and scale on campus. The question you have to know always. If you don't know this question, eventually whatever you build is going to be destroyed. Where does the water go? Where is the water going? Because water gets everywhere. It gets through any nook and cranny and hole and poorly dug area or oak gap in a foundation. Where does the water go? Because it gets everywhere. So when God says, as the water covers the sea, every nook and cranny and everywhere God's truth will be. Every corner of the earth, every jungle, every desert that'll be blossoming like a rose, his knowledge will be there. His truth will be there. And you'll see it on the campus too. You get little windows into it. Behind our house the other day, we have a couple, I think you heard Mr. Pack reference a couple of cats on campus that we have. And my wife is feeding them while they're away. And that didn't take very long for us now to be the ones they want to come over and talk to. Food is a powerful drug for a cat. But just wandering around the neighborhood. And the other day I was looking out my back window and there was, I think it was Kona, just walking up the boardwalk toward our house. And she jumped a little bit or moved sideways. I wasn't quite sure what it was. I think she was startled herself, but then just kept walking like it was no big deal. And I realized what startled her. There were three or four deer just having a breakfast meal just in the woods behind our house, not thinking anything of it. You'll see them around the campus. We have turkeys and deer and, let's see, foxes and chipmunks and squirrels. And you just go down the list of animals that you just run into. If you come and do a night tour, especially if it's dusk, you will probably see some deer out west. It's pretty much after services when we go on our night drive. We kind of have a tradition where we'll drive the campus when we finish services on Sabbaths. And often we'll see 5, 10, 15 deer just enjoying a nice leisurely stroll. Because they know nothing's going to happen here. They've been here long enough to know nothing's going to happen here. But it's a picture. You get to experience a part of that picture. Let's go to Joel. Book of Joel. A few books over. Excuse me. Chapter 2. Joel chapter 2. Verse 27, Joel 2:27. Verse 27 reads, "And you shall know that I am in the midst of Israel, and that I am the Lord your God and none else, and my people shall never be ashamed. And it shall come to pass afterward that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh. And your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. Your old men shall dream dreams, and your young men shall see visions. And also upon the servants and upon the handmaids in those days will I pour out my spirit." Some of these verses you read now and you see things like, "And it shall come to pass afterward when he pours out his spirit." We had no idea what we were reading for decades, but there had to be something before the afterwards when he pulled out his spirit, before he poured out his spirit, but I digress. Verse 30, "And I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth, blood and fire and pillars of smoke, and the sun shall be turned to darkness, the moon into blood before that great and terrible day of the Lord. And it shall come to pass that whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be delivered." Whosoever. "For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem shall be deliverance, as the Lord has said, and in the remnant whom the Lord shall call." Whosoever, God opens it to everyone to receive his spirit, to have his heart or her heart changed. That's not the case again today. You are unique. I'm unique. We're part of a tiny group. 144,000 over the last 6,000 years kind of sounds big when you think, okay, 144,000, that's a bunch of football stadiums. That seems like a lot of people. But if there have been 100 billion people who've been alive since the garden, that's a tiny percentage. And it's not really that many at all if you think about the size and scope of what's going to happen, not just when Earth for the first 1,000 years, but when we start going beyond to the stars, other planets, and the scope, you will always be, I will always be, or we're striving to, be part of that first 144,000. There's only one first. There's only a small group of firsts that get to go first. For us to be able to be alive today and see the kingdom of God arrive, not only do you get to be one of the 144,000, you get to be one of the 144,000 that sees the arrival of the kingdom of God. That should make the hair on the back of your neck stand up and think, "God, why did you call me? I'm just a piece of flesh. Why do I get to do it now?" And we know, as we've learned, since before the foundation of the world, he saw you in these chairs in his mind. And however God does it, I have absolutely no idea that he could nudge and bump and put genetics together in such a way that you and I are called when we are called. That's the God we serve. That's why it's easy, in some cases, to fear him. that he could look before the foundation of the world and, in a way, see you in chairs today. He's outside of space and time, so technically he could. That's really hard for us to conceive. But you got to be one of those people. He puts you in your spot. He wants you to be in this way of life. The only way that you lose that position as one of the 144,000, the only way is if you or I choose to walk away. What we're saying, if we walk away from God's way of life, God's church, his truth, what we're saying is, God, you were wrong. I know you say in your word that you've planned this since before the foundation of the world, but you were wrong. I'm not the one you're called. I'm human, figured it out. No, it's only our decision to walk away from this way of life, to be removed from the 144,000. Let's go to the New Testament. All right, I should go to Jonah first. It's the book of Jonah. Book of Jonah, chapter 7. Jonah, chapter 7. Oh, no, sorry. Let's go to John. My mistake. My abbreviations are really effective. J-O-H. John, Jonah. Let's go to John because there is no Jonah, chapter 7. So if you found that, the extended version of Jonah. It was back when he went back into the belly of the fish, and it just... John chapter 7, in verse 1. John 7, verse 1. After these things, Jesus walked into Galilee, for he would not walk in Jewry, because the Jews sought to kill him. Now that the Jews' feast of tabernacles was at hand, his brethren therefore said unto him, depart hence and go into Judea, that the disciples may see the work that you do. For there is no man that does anything in secret, and he himself seeks to be known openly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world. For neither did his brethren believe in him. And Jesus said unto them, my time is not yet come, but your time is always ready. Jump down to verse 33. Then said Jesus unto them, yet a little while I am with you, and then I can go unto him that sent me. You shall seek me, and you shall not find me, and where I am, there you cannot come. I went back to the Father. Then said the Jews among themselves, whither will he go that we cannot find him? Where will he go? Will he go to the dispersed among the Gentiles and teach the Gentiles? How is that going to work? Where is he? We can track him down, they're thinking. What manner of saying is this that he said, you shall seek me and not find me, and where I am, there you cannot come. Verse 37. And the last day, in that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, saying, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. Remember, the last great day pictures that time when God's Spirit is opened up to the entire world. Verse 38, he that believes on me, as the scripture has said, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. God's Spirit, as it's used in us, an example in the New Testament, when God's Spirit was used to heal the woman, he felt his Spirit leave him. So when we use that Spirit, we lose it. That's why we have to ask for it every single day. We want God to continue to replenish and fill and give us more, help us become even more sensitive. It's something I always pray when I ask for God's Spirit. I ask him, for one, give me more of your Spirit, replenish it, but Father, also make me more sensitive to it. Make me realize when I get that nudge, because I could ask for a show of hands, but you'd all raise your hand. Those times when you've made a mistake and you were nudged inside your mind, some people would call it a conscience, but what I would say is God's Spirit nudging you. I don't care if you're baptized or not. God's Spirit works with you if you're not yet baptized. And then after you think, I knew that, shouldn't have done that. If I was just more receptive, more sensitive to God's Spirit. But that is why you are here. Long wrote about having a feast of rejoicing and growth. You and I have 8 days that we get to be together. How easy is it to rejoice when we look at the time when all can have God's Spirit? There is no war. Children can play with animals. No one's hurt. There are no more tears. That makes it easy to rejoice. The feast gives us a chance to grow both spiritually and physically. I don't even say that as a joke. Although, by the end of the feast, you will have grown physically too. So this is my early feast suit. And I have feast suits that I have saved for later in the feast. But you'll grow physically. If there's something God's people do well, we eat. We eat good and share bread and break bread together. So, as you're here, do things you normally wouldn't do. That's easier said than done. Most of us want to do the things we're used to doing, or you may have a couple of ideas in your mind. Like, I like to do this. That's great. Do that. Whatsoever your soul lusts after. You're commanded to do that thing. But when someone asks you to go do something, and it may be something you're not used to doing or something you may not be even interested in doing, stretch yourself. Go do things you would normally not do. Get out of your comfort zone. Remember, you're learning, I'm learning, we're training to be teachers. If we have some teachers in the room, you know that the things that you experience with others, especially students, make you a more effective teacher because I got to approach this in a different way. Your experiences make you a more effective teacher because you have to see things in different perspectives. So by doing the things that we wouldn't normally be doing, we're going to see things in a different perspective. For if you go with someone and they're doing something they love to do, and you may be indifferent to it, and you get to see their joy from what they're doing, or you may find, wow, that was more fun than I thought it would be. So do also things that are joyful, the feast. Because God wants us to rejoice, right? So find activities that bring you joy. That could be whatever it is for you, for me. We all have the different things that we love to do. I love good food, and I love showing off the campus. So I have it built in this year. This is a perfect feast for me. But do the things that bring you joy, things that excite you, that make you think about all of the aspects of what it means to live this way of life. Or even if it's not even related to Christianity, find things that make you joyful at the feast. So with the 10 minutes or so I have left, I'm going to list out a whole bunch of things that you can potentially do at the feast. You're going to have your own ideas. Come up with ideas. Write them down. Share them with each other. Over a meal, because you will have meals. We have a meal tomorrow together. So some things to grow at the feast. How to grow. Number one, this one's easy, it's fun. Serve each other. Serve each other. That's not just here. It's easy to do here. If you're an usher or set up or helping in this department or in housekeeping, whatever department you're helping at the feast, that's easy service. Because you're assigned to it. It's service. You get credit for it. But find other ways to serve each other. Pick different people. Don't pick the same group of people that you would go out with. Go out with the people you want to go out with. Yes, do that, for sure. That's whatsoever your soul lusts after. But on other activities, find people that you wouldn't normally pick. Look around the room. See people like, I don't know them. I don't know that person. You know what? We're going to go out to go for a walk, or we're going to get a coffee. It doesn't matter what it is. You don't have to spend a lot of money to do it. But find different people. Pick different groups. If you're young, sit with someone who's older. If you're older, have fun with someone who's younger. male, female, age, race, background, find people who are from different groups than you're in, demographics. Because what will happen, you will have interesting conversations because they have experiences you don't and vice versa, and you will get to know someone. This is the only place on earth that you could have the diversity of God's church. If you don't have the view that I have up here, be able to look around the room, and every race, color, every just male, female, light, dark, that's God's church. And that's also the opportunity for us to be able to learn about other people. Because everyone's lives are different. What you go through, what you experience are different. The story that always comes to mind was when I sat down with a man years ago, Mr. Thuvenin, and we started talking trains. And that started a conversation of trains that went on for years. So go outside your comfort zone. Talk with people that you may not want to talk with. Feel like because you're shy or you're uncomfortable. Push yourself to get outside that comfort zone and talk to different people. Okay, before services, there's some other ways to serve here. Go for a morning coffee. Coffee's cheap. If you can get it even cheaper, there's a Starbucks right here in Giant Eagle. Some people like it. I'm not a fan. It's burnt coffee, in my opinion. But I also drink instant coffee, so am I really the one to judge? But ask people out for coffee. You can have a group. It's a relatively inexpensive way to be able to enjoy some time with people. Have some people over to your hotel. Or go out to a restaurant with someone. Go for a walk. This is all stuff you can do before services. There's so many places to walk on this campus. There are all sorts of paths. There's young or old. I don't care what it is. But everywhere you can go on campus, there's somewhere that has paved roads. You have places that have gravel roads. You have places that are a little bit more treacherous depending on what you're able to do and get around. But even if you're in a wheelchair, you can Grand Garden. There's a path that's accessible for you to get down to the Grand Garden without the stairs. We designed this campus to be very accessible. So go for walks. At services, help each other. Strengthen each other. If you see someone who has a need, you open a door, help someone carry a bag. Look for those opportunities to be able to jump in and serve each other. Because it becomes addictive. And this is the thing about service. I challenge all of you to outdo each other. Just one-up each other on your fellowshipping and on your service. Someone does something nice for you, do something nicer to someone else. Show them that you can out-service them. Clean up after yourselves. Clean up after others. Ask to help clean up. Help to organize. Go above and beyond. You go to the washroom, you notice there's water, it's not your sink, wipe off that sink. After services, dinners, again, go out for a meal. Go for walks, have people over, explore the area. That's one of the things that we haven't really started looking at. We haven't had time, but there's things that I would do in Ohio that I don't think I've ever done, because when you live somewhere, you never do the things that people do when they come here as tourists or for the feast. I remember I've now been up the CN Tower twice. Both of those times were about 5 to 20 years after I had left Toronto. Never went up it when I was in Toronto. It was just a landmark. You never think to do certain things. So if you're from here, find something that you wouldn't do. If you're not from here, explore. There's some neat stuff. If you like parks, Cuyahoga Valley is one of the prettiest places you're ever going to go. There are just some spots there that are just gorgeous. But you have a great lake just to the north of us. It's not a far trip up to Cleveland, an hour, 20 minutes over to Akron. Again, take advantage of any service opportunity that comes up at events. You may see a need. Or find someone running the event, or find Mr. Giles or myself and say, I'd like to help out in a different way. Well, that's great. Hold the door. Help that person get something. But if you're scoping, you're probably going to find opportunities show themselves. And because you're on an area that's about as close to the millennium and the kingdom that you'll ever be, explore the campus. We'll have maps that are probably, if not already out on the information table, we'll have them out tomorrow, that have maps of where you can go and how you can get there, and walking paths and car paths and driving and doing it at night. This is the most beautiful place on earth. And somehow, no matter when God has the feast, he manages to make it look like fall. I looked last year. The opening night was middle of September, a little bit later. Some were earlier. But we're weeks after that. And now it's suddenly turning into fall outside. And it's really only been the last week. But explore it. Find the paths. Find the areas to walk. Go find your favorite spot to look, to think, to meditate. I will tell you mine. I think I've said this before. But I have a couple of spots on campus that I absolutely love. And they change. One has never changed. And I haven't been out in that direction in a while. But and the trees make it even harder because they're getting bigger. But if you go out to the lake down here on the lower campus, go to the far side of the lake just past the Weeping Willow and look back this direction. You have the building and the trees and the campus and the lights. And to me, it's one of those iconic pictures that I never lose in my mind. But there are so many other places. Mirror Lake in the evening to see the lights on that water and the trees. You can go down to the Grand Garden. Some of the walks through the valley are, it's like you're in the middle of a fairy tale when you walk through that valley with the big tall trees. There's so many places to explore. And the way you do it with service is drag someone along with you, or two, or three, or four. Find your favorite places. Another way to make this feast one of growth: attend every activity that you can. If I can't go to the seniors activity for a few more years, so I can't attend that one. And I can't attend the singles activity because I'm not single. And I can't attend the teen activity. You know where that's going. I will attend the kids activity, so, because I'm still a kid at heart, so I can swim. But dinner dance, family day. We have a goal internally that we're trying to do. We want every single one of you to be at family day. If you didn't sign up, you need to find the registration table. You need to talk with folks. We want everyone. If you dinner dance, it's different. It could be expensive. You have concerns about cost. Come see me. Come see Mr. Giles if you're concerned about cost. But we want everyone to be at family day. Because it's not just the day for families. This is the family for family day. We want you all there. We want to grow, to develop, and we can't do that alone. So find those activities, sign up for them, be there. If you can't afford it, come see me or Mr. Giles. Or if you can afford extra to give extra to help those who can't, do that. But be at the activities. Mrs. Vigneault told me she has 100% attendance success for people signing up for events. So I kind of challenged her to make sure she keeps the 100%. So if you don't sign up, she'll find you. But we actually had more events than any other site in the world. Our luncheons and whatnot, but we also have our tours and things to go, and there'll be a sign up for that. My hope is I see so many names on a tour list that suddenly now I have to break this into multiple days, because I don't care how many times I have to tour, I'm the one doing them. So if you get the sign up for them. When for family day, we'll have carriage rides with the horse, and we'll have a land tour. There are just so many activities that we want all of you to be part of. Brethren have been generous. It is amazing every year how much people will give bonus for their activity signups that allow us to make sure everyone attends everywhere in the world. And when you go to the events, don't sit with the same people every time. Find people you don't know. At first, you're going to feel a little uncomfortable because you're now going sitting with someone you don't know. It'll take you about 5 minutes, if that, to suddenly have a conversation that you think, wow, why, I got to do this more often. But so sit with people that you wouldn't normally sit with or you don't know. And last but not definitely not least, find the time to make sure you keep the physical spiritual balance. Still pray. Still study. It's different at the feast, yes. It's not in the same way you're able to focus in, but you need to maintain, I need to maintain that time that we stay close with God. Because remember, the physical is fun. It draws us out. It helps us be better teachers. It grows us. But the spiritual is why we're here. An easy way to study at the feast, if you're not thinking about it, review the previous day's sermons. I guarantee that will eat up a half an hour of Bible study. And then just review them, and you've got your study in. You're keeping yourself, myself, all of us, close to God. So how will you know? Besides, you lift the feast different than when you came. How will you know? If we get to the last great day, if we're having our cocktail hour at the end of that last service on the last great day, you're going to feel some very different feelings. Spiritually, you should feel refreshed, energized, charged. You'll have heard scores of minutes and hours of messages. You'll hear truth. You'll be spiritually fed. You will be so full of spiritual food that it'll be unlike any other time. Physically, you're going to be fatter. I'm sorry. Just wanted to make sure it was clear. It's going to happen. But physically, you're going to be tired because you don't go this hard for 8 days. You'll be ready. At the end of the feast, it's always the same. I love good food, but at the end of the feast, I'm thinking, I can't wait to just have a salad. And as someone who likes meat, that is, but at the end of the feast, you're ready for normal food. And again, yeah, your pants will fit a little tighter. But you'll also be sad because if you worked really hard at this feast, if I work really hard, all the people I get to look around from up here and see all the faces, I'll know you all better. So I won't want you to go. It'll make you pray harder for the kingdom of God, because you want all of those people that you've built more of a relationship with to be back again. Those people who aren't here to be here. That's what will happen at the end of the feast. So for the next 8 days, take every opportunity that's possible to grow. Have a great feast. And take advantage of all that it has to offer. Find ways to do stuff you normally wouldn't do. Find areas to grow and serve. But most importantly, have the best, most profitable, most joyful, and most inspiring feast ever.